School is in session with Basketball U. Welcome to your study time for the world of college hoops. Now, here are your professors, Tyler Rocky and Shane Orley on ESPN 1000.
Come on in. This is Basketball U. It's all brought to you by Riverfront Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram and buy at riverfront.com. Tyler Rocky, Shane Norling. We're with you till 9 o'clock talking all things college basketball. We had a hell of a night in the women's game last night, including with Iowa and UConn. And on top of that, we've got a Final Four to settle on the men's side as well. Shay is up in Detroit after taking in a little bit of Tigers opening day. How you doing, buddy?
We're good, man. Had a great day yesterday. I'm a little tired. It was
a long
day.
How many years straight now is that for you at Tigers opening day?
Excluding the COVID year, I think it's since 2007. So
awesome.
17.
Jeez.
16.
Can almost smoke a cigarette legally.
The streak is almost legal. It's almost
It can almost vote. It can almost join the military. What else can it almost do?
Wasn't there a limit on buying porn back in the day? You could buy. You couldn't get a Playboy. They
had
that shield over the magazines.
In Texas, isn't that a law now that you have to be a certain age to like access some certain sites?
I believe there is a law about that now, but I don't think it's not that old, is it? You don't have to be 18.
I think you do.
Those poor kids.
Anyway, you want to join us, 312-332-3776. I think we start with last night's game between UConn and Iowa. Fantastic game, back and forth. UConn gets the big lead. I believe it got as big as 12. And then all of a sudden, here comes Iowa storming back. Caitlin Clark was pretty much neutralized in the first half, only had 6 points. And then in the second half, she starts to take off, continues that streak of 20-plus points in tournament games. And it all comes down to what happened or what was called or maybe what should not have been called. At the end of the game, you've got a moving screen called, and that completely flips the tenor of the game when UConn had a chance, down one, to take the lead in the final seconds.
Yeah, I feel like everybody's really angry about that call, and I get it. Because the problem is the officials were so bad all night that when they finally made the correct call, it felt like they set a precedent where they shouldn't have done that. But that is 100% the correct call. That was an illegal screen. Anytime that you have somebody running through your leg and you've got knee out and you're doing the chicken wing with the elbow, it's going to get called. You know who I actually blame the most for it?
Who's that?
To be honest.
Who?
Paige Beckers. Why did she run so wide?
Yeah.
All night they're running screens real close. They're doing a great job. She's doing a great job running off of them, setting them, getting the ball, creating space. Has the ball in her hands trying to make a play. She takes that so wide, it kind of pulled, was it Edwards, out of position?
Edwards, yeah. Aaliyah Edwards.
And you just see then you're trying to make up for it defensively. Kick the knee out. You're doing the chicken wing with the elbow. You can't do it. It's going to get called. But I thought it was actually on Beckers for running so wide around it.
Yeah, and that's what they teach you, too, is you want to go almost shoulder to shoulder off of someone on a rub play like that, and you cut, especially when if you're curling off of that. Edwards probably should have been starting her drop down as well. If that was that's the play they ran all game. I'd imagine you go back to your bread and butter. But I think that the other part of it, too, was Edwards had set that screen 20 times over that same exact one where, like, she's moving a little bit. They didn't call it once all game. Watch, there's a foul. There's a non-call, actually, on a play. I want to say there's probably, like, 90 or 80 seconds left in the game. Watch the moving screen she has there and tell me how that – and she got away with that one but not this one. It's the precedent that was set by the officials, and you're right. It was awfully officiated all game long. All game long. And the one time they actually get it right was was at an inopportune time, because if you've set a precedent for the first 39 minutes and 50 seconds and you change that precedent in the most critical time of the game, that's where you have the issue. It's like an umpire in baseball. If you haven't been calling the high strike all game, but you decide to call it in the ninth inning, guess what? It's a bad call.
Well, yeah, that, and if you're going to make that call, where, like, physical basketball, now we're deciding it's not okay, which it was all game. Honestly,
that was one of the most physical basketball games I've seen all year.
And that girl for UConn, Nika Mool, oh my goodness, what a player. I was watching it with a buddy, and we just kept talking about that, like the way she was hounding Caitlin Clark. And it was too bad she had a lower body injury. She had to go to the tunnel for a little bit, went back to the locker room, came back and was just never really the same. That's when Caitlin Clark kind of started to open things up. But yeah, like, she was an awesome player defensively last night. I couldn't really take my eyes off of how good they were playing defensively and how physical UConn was. But to finish my point was, you play a game that physical. I thought UConn, look, I'm not going to say they got screwed on the illegal screen, but I was surprised at the other end of the floor. They're hacking away, trying to get a foul, put Iowa at the stripe, and it ends up being called a hell ball. The possession arrow was with Iowa. That screwed UConn even worse.
Yeah, it really did.
You just needed the time on the clock. And then you've got Paige Beckers turning her back to the inbounder with 0.9 left. Caitlin Clark can just throw
brilliant
it off
play.
Of her.
Brilliant. Yeah. That was brilliant.
At the end of the game, I was sitting there, and I'm like, you don't, because when you're inbounding underneath your own basket there, listen, if you have a 93-foot heave, go ahead. Go. If that's how you lose a basketball game, so be it. But I was thinking, like, just throw it off of her three times, and then you're going to run out the clock that way. You don't actually have to put this ball really in play at all. You don't have to draw the foul or anything. You just want to kill the final, what was it, like a second and change left? At that point,
it was like 1.1. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there was very little that you had to do at that point. And you actually didn't want to get fouled there down the stretch. So you just wanted to put the ball in play and not have anything dumb happen in that moment. But it was a fantastic game. But it's obviously going to come down to the fact that people are going to be looking at that call for years now. Like, that's going to be one of those defining things. And listen, sometimes that's just the, like, I just opened up Twitter, and what'd you know? Like, on this day in 2019, you know what happened in 2019 on this day? It was the Kyle Guy foul in the corner playing Auburn. Like, that is one of the all-time. But hey, guess what?
That's an all-timer.
It led to Virginia getting to the national championship and winning that national championship. And, I mean, that's one of the all-time bad calls. And I say that as someone who is on the Virginia side. I loved that Virginia team. And I couldn't believe that they actually ended up making that call in the moment. But here we sit. Virginia's a champ because of that call. And who knows? Caitlin Clark might end up becoming a champion because of a call that was made. And that's just the way sports works sometimes. There's nothing you can really do about it.
Just going back to that Kyle Guy call, and we saw one of them last night also in the Iowa game on a Caitlin Clark three-point attempt. The airspace rule, like, I get it's a safety hazard and you don't want players getting in the way and guys landing on somebody else when they come down from a three-point attempt. I hate the rule. I hate the way that it's legislated. I hate the, like, last night, Caitlin Clark comes down from a three-point, rolls her ankle on her own, falls backwards, and it's a foul call because of the airspace rule. And it just, the way that ends up getting legislated, I almost never like.
I actually like the way it was called last night on that play. I think that was one of the rare instances where I was like, you know what, that's probably right. If you look at the girl, she puts her entire, like, foot underneath her to, it wasn't Caitlin going full circus act, kicking the legs out or anything.
Yeah, it wasn't James Harden with the leg kick.
Yeah, no, it wasn't like the frustrating things that we see in the NBA. It was, I thought, a very natural movement for her when she was taking that shot, and that it really was correctly officiated in what I think is one of the rare instances where it is correctly officiated. There's just, yeah. I mean, I think we give way too many liberties to the people who have the basketball in general, and they get away with a lot at all levels of basketball at this point. I mean, even the way that, and even the way that you saw some of the fouls and in some cases the non-fouls get officiated, you can see the way that everyone now kind of does the head whip. It's one of the most annoying things to watch in all of basketball right now, but it's just something that these officials are going to have to figure out a way to better officiate it. And listen, I think that's one thing that this tournament brings out every year is the people who haven't watched college basketball really get a glimpse of how bad the officiating is in college basketball. And I think last night was brutally officiated from start to finish. It wasn't just the one call there. In fact, that was, you're right, Shay. Like, that was one of the few instances where things were actually called correctly. And unfortunately, because of the way the first 39 minutes and 50 seconds were officiated, it looks like the bad call out of the bunch.
Well, it's the same thing you said. If you're calling a high strike zone all game and then you put the squeeze on in the ninth inning, that's not right. It's the same deal here where, like, if you're going to let them play that physical and – speaking of James Harden, like Paige Bueckers a couple times was launching herself into a defender trying to get a foul call on a jump shot, never got it. Like, they're just saying you can play as physical as you want out here.
Yeah.
So then for in the final moment, that to be the thing where now we're not going to let you play physical. Now we're going to make the textbook foul call. In the moment that you needed it the least, that it's a tough thing to swallow if you're a UConn fan or one of the players on that team. You know what else is interesting? Is all the billing that this got as Paige Bueckers versus Caitlin Clark, the best players on the floor were neither of them.
I was going to say.
It was Aaliyah Edwards, it was Stalky, it was KK Arnold.
I think those two actually did more to help their teams try to lose that game than win that game. Like, there were some really bad shots taken by both of those players throughout the course of the game. And I get, like, Caitlin Clark throughout her entire season has probably taken hundreds of bad shots, but a lot of them go in. So there, people look at it. But, like, some of the shot selection, some of the logo stuff, if it's not going, it's a bad shot. And I look at the way that both of those two players played in this game. I was like, neither of them played spectacularly in this game. I think the numbers may look a little bit better, but that's mostly massaged by volume. And I just think that the way that that game played, you're right, the role players stepped up. And when you get to these final four and championship level games, sure, stars are important, but really it is the role players that end up winning you a lot of these games, especially on deep March runs. Where, and now that we're into April too, like, they're the ones that end up winning a lot of these big time marquee type of games because of the fact that, listen, the stars can only muster up so much for so long. And you could tell Caitlin Clark was dog tired yesterday. They were face guarding her all game. She was trying to run off of screens. They're playing physical with her coming off of a lot of screens. And she was winded. I think the same can be said for Paige Bueckers. The amount of screens that both of those two were running off of, and in the case of Caitlin Clark getting face guarded for 40 minutes, like, that's going to take the wind out of you, and you're going to need your role players to step up. And I think both sides had a number of role players step up in a big way.
Well, to your point about the bad shots, I mean, there was a point, can't remember when it was, but it was like Iowa started getting some momentum. They were on a little bit of a run. Caitlin Clark brings the ball up, gets to literally the logo on the left side of the floor, basically running sideline, just pulls up and launches from about 40 feet with Nika Mühl in her face. And that's one of those where it's like the Steph Curry phenomenon. You can hit it, so it's hard for me to say it's a bad shot, but you haven't made it all night, so it is a bad shot. And it didn't go in. It ended up being way short, clanked off the front of the rim. Iowa was lucky to get a rebound. The one thing I will say for her, she had 7 assists. She probably should have had like 20. She should have had like 20 or 25. Mm-hmm. Like, she was delivering some dimes that were just getting wasted.
And that's one of the things. When your shot isn't going the way that hers wasn't in the first half, you have to find other ways to impact the basketball game, and she did facilitate very well. And there could have been moments where she could have just been a chucker, or she could have, like, sulked her head and really changed the entire outlook of the game. Instead, she found out a different way to help her team win. And it proved, in the way that she kind of played with Stolke, like a little two-man game, down the stretch. I thought that was fantastic, and I thought that's really what got her groove going, and that's what helped her hit some of those shots down the stretch, too. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776, talking all things Final Four. We'll move to the men's side when we come back. Can anybody, and I mean anybody, beat the UConn Huskies right now? Because they look dominant. They're winning games by an average margin of over 27 points. We'll discuss all that and more when we come back. It's Basketball U on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay.
I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Talking college basketball, Final Four with you. It's all brought to you by our friends over at Buy Riverfront Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram and buy at riverfront.com. Tyler Aki and Shay Norling with you until 9 a.m. And you can, don't forget, watch the show on YouTube as well. Go to youtube.com, search ESPN Chicago. You can find the show right there. Watch us. Shay's live back up in Detroit. I am here in our State Street studios along with Justin Pottinger. And all right, let's get to the men's side here. We talked a little bit about the women's game from last night. If you missed any of that, by the way, you can check it out on the Basketball U podcast. But we now have our men's Final Four all set, ready to go. We've got Purdue and NC State, UConn and Alabama. I do want to start with this UConn and Alabama game because I think this has a chance to be either the best basketball game we've seen all season or the worst basketball game we've seen all season. And it's all going to hinge on Alabama's three-point shooting, one of the best three-point shooting teams in the entire country. Tide check in at a 37% clip on the year. And I look at what the formula is for beating UConn, and you really can't find one. But I think the formula for beating any team is that if you go out there and shoot lights out from three, you're always going to have a chance. And that's something that Alabama is certainly capable of doing.
Yeah, this does kind of feel like one of those games where Nate Oates is going to need his team to go out and score 100 points.
Yeah.
And it's something that they have been able to do all season. It's something that they've done in this tournament. They did it to, I think it was College of Charleston in the first round and just hit them with a hammer.
Yeah.
But it hasn't really felt like that Alabama offense since. It's been funny. Their defense has been so maligned, but I feel like they've been living off of their defense for the past few games that they've been playing. Like, the guarding has leveled up a little bit in the tournament. They've gotten a little better defensively. And I'm just interested in seeing how this game plays out. Because to me, I'm with you. It's one of those where if UConn is hitting their shots and Alabama's not, UConn's going to win by 30. And if Alabama can hit their threes, this might be competitive.
Now, I do think we're not going to see Alabama employ the strategy that we heard Brad Underwood give his team last week.
No, we're going to keep going at it. We're going to keep going at it. We're going to do it. He blocks 100, he blocks 100. We're not backing down. We're going to do what we do.
That did not end well for Illinois last week. In fact, Illinois was 0-for-19 on field goals that were contested by Donovan Clingan last weekend. Now, Alabama is this team that you look at their shot chart at the end of a game, and it looks like an NBA game shot chart. Everything is coming either in the paint or it's coming from three. They play a very analytical style of basketball. Nate Oates, a once-upon-a-time high school teacher up in Michigan, like, that's just he thinks very analytically. In their practices, they have 4- and 5-point lines. Like, that's the way that program is run. And I look at Bama. So if you look at the numbers on them this year, Alabama is 20-2 this season when they shoot 35% or better from three, including 3-0 in the tournament. And their only losses are neutral site against Purdue, 92-86, so a close game there. And at Kentucky, a 117-95 game. You had the offense with 95 points to win that game. You just had nowhere near the defense. I can't even remember a conference game where you allowed 117 points in a regulation game. I don't know if I ever can remember one of those. But the flip side of that is Alabama this season is 6-4 when they attempt 35 or more threes. So it comes a little bit more down to or back to earth there. And I don't know what Alabama team we're going to see. I've said it all tournament. I don't know what Alabama team we're going to get in these games. And really, we've gotten the good Alabama in every game except the Grand Canyon game.
Yeah, I think that if you get the good Alabama tonight, you're right. We're going to be looking at one of those really nice, competitive, contested games. But it's the same thing, man. Like, I just keep looking at the way this UConn team plays in all of these games, and it almost feels like the first halves of games, they are just going through the motions, no worries, not a big deal. Like, we know what's going to happen. It was the thing with Illinois. Get to halftime, and it was 23-all, and you're like, boy, Illinois might actually be in this game. They might be able to win this thing. 30-0 run later. Uh-oh.
But like, Nate Oates isn't employing that strategy.
Right, agreed. And that's where I do feel like they're not going to just continue to attack Klingon, and they're not going to continue to go after him down low. They will shoot as many threes as they need to stay in it. But you brought up that Kentucky game, one of the more thrilling games I've watched all season. That's the bad version of Alabama, where if the defense isn't there, if the defense can't hold up, it's really not going to matter, because Bama played about as well as you can in that game offensively and still lost like that. It just, Tyler, is this a situation where you feel like the Tide even have a chance? Because the more that I watch UConn, and the more that I watch Donovan Klingon, and the more that I watch the way that Danny Hurley wants to do things, the more I feel like this is just this Final Four. Like I told you pre-show, I don't know that there's a lot of juice here, because it just feels like a coronation to me. Feels like yes, Edie versus Klingon would be absolute theater. But just from a perspective of what I think is going to happen, you've got UConn as a double-digit favorite today against a 4 seed, a top 12 KenPom team. They're getting, what, 12.5? It's like outer space how much better UConn is and how much better they look than everyone else. They might be a 4-point favorite against Purdue.
I think that the intrigue's been there all tournament long. Like, we're seeing some record ratings along the way. But when you talk about the Final Four here, the intrigue, I think, there's intrigue in UConn. There's intrigue in Purdue. The other two, I don't know. I don't know if I have America's pulse on what they think of Alabama. I think people like the NC State underdog story, though. I do think people are into that. Now, if it were
Duke, do you like it?
I go back and forth with it. I think because I wasn't around for the Jimmy V team, I don't care as much as maybe some people who were. But NC State's like a tortured soul. Like, they're a tortured fan base. You're always the outcast of the triangle. You get talked down by by Duke and Carolina fans. Like, they are the ugly stepchild of the state of North Carolina, a state that loves their college basketball, and they've always had that underdog mentality. And I've told you, my favorite message board in all of college sports is PacPride.com, because those people are lunatics. And for them to have this level of juice and this level of fun, like, I'm for it. Like, I would say I like it. I don't think they're a great team. I'll say that. I do not think they're a great team. I think the DJ Burns story is cool. I'm sorry, I think he gets absolutely wiped out by Zach Edey today. But I look at the team itself, and like, basically what I know about them and the story that, like, Kevin Keats was probably getting fired before the end of the ACC tournament, and then he goes on a heater, and what do you know? He's in the Final Four. He's triggered contract extensions based off of performance after he was supposed to get fired. Like, I think there's stories here that people are interested in. I think there's intrigue, but you're right. Like, the games today probably aren't going to be that good. They're not going to be like what we saw last night with UConn and Iowa.
I think there's a chance that both games today are utter blowouts. Like, NC State is about as easy of an opponent. Not that NC State's an easy opponent. To disrespect them at this point would be ridiculous. Like, it was kind of the same thing with Duke, feeling like, okay, Duke, NC State, Duke's getting a break now, getting the Wolfpack this late, and Shire's going to get a trip to the Final Four. They got run off the floor in the second half of that game. Like, it wasn't even competitive. And that's actually been the story with NC State this entire tournament. With the exception of the Oakland Grizzlies, who took them to overtime, NC State hasn't even had a scare. They've been blowing teams out.
Yeah. And honestly,
so to get to this point now, like winning 5 games in 5 days, doing what UConn did with Kemba Walker 13 years ago, now you're in the Final Four. To discount them now, and it feels like you almost have to because they're going up against Zach Edey and Purdue and like this kind of juggernaut out of the Big Ten, but it almost feels disrespectful to be like, this is an easy matchup for Purdue.
Yeah. Like you look at what NC State has done. I don't even think the margins of victory really tell the story. Like they hammered Duke in that second half, absolutely crushed them. Marquette, they were dominant from start to finish. That game was never in question after the first bucket went down for NC State. Would they go out on a 9-0 run to start that game?
Yeah.
The Texas Tech game, they crushed them. The classic ACC over Big 12 dominance there. You just look at everything that they've done along their path. Even in the ACC tournament, they were killing teams.
It's incredible,
like,
too, that
this team lost their final four regular season games and then have gone on a rampage here to close out the season and are going to the Final Four. And if I had to ask you, which of the two games is more likely to have an upset, which one would you say?
Ah, boy. Just like going off the lines, you'd almost have to say NC State. They're just a shorter dog. I think Bama's more likely to get blown out than NC State is, but I also think Bama's more likely to win the game than NC State is. It's a very weird kind of context. Like, if you get the good version of Alabama, they can win today. If you get the bad version, like we said, they're going to get bombed. They might lose by 40. NC State's probably going to lose this game by about 10 points most of the time. Like, that's...
Yeah.
They're going to win it very few times. They're going to get blown out almost never. I expect that game to be the closer of the two because I just feel like it's the likelihood of UConn bombing Alabama is probably the most likely thing to happen today. But is there a world where I can talk myself into Bama winning that game? Yes. Is there a world where I can talk myself into NC State beating Purdue? Not really.
I'm with you. I think that Alabama has the better chance to actually go out and pull off an upset. But NC State, I think, will, if we were to play these out like 50, 100 times, NC State's going to settle in at like anywhere between like an 8 to 13 point loss. The game might look better, but the potential for the Bama UConn game to get ugly is certainly there just because UConn's UConn and Bama's this team that relies on streaks. Bama entered this end of the season as the worst team in momentum, which is basically calculated on like your momentum heading into the tournament. It's basically calculated on what you were doing at the beginning of the season, kind of the hype around you and preseason rankings and all that stuff, and where you are now. Like entering the tournament, Bama was dead last or second to last in the country, only behind Michigan. And Michigan was awful this year. Bama now to get to the Final Four rolling with all the momentum. And listen, it feels like with Bama, you get the, oh, 2 games on, 1 game off.
Yeah.
We had the 1 game off against Grand Canyon. They did just enough to win that game, but every other game's been on for them. And I would say my one concern for today with Alabama, how do they adjust to the sight lines? The sight lines of the football stadium, and for a team that predicates itself on shooting,
yep.
How are they going to adjust to that? Because it's a real thing.
Well, if they come out and like Ryland Griffin's just on fire early, or Sears is hitting his shots, like that's when you're going to know pretty quickly we're going to be in for a competitive game. If they come out and everything's short early because they can't get it, or everything's long early, clanking the back iron because they can't figure out what to do with that shallow kind of rise behind the backboard. It is a very different look. We've heard about it almost every year. And it's a Final Four thing. Like once they move this game onto the raised court in the football stadium, you have a new angle going behind the backboard. It is an adjustment for the shooters. That's going to be less of an issue for UConn. If they want to run down low, run things through Klingon a lot, that's going to be a lot less of a problem for them than it could be for Alabama. So we'll know pretty quick, I think. If Bama comes out, they just hit a few and they can lock in, this is going to be a game. If they come out missing, that's when UConn, maybe this is the live betting opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah. I think
Bama
right.
misses their first two or three shots, I'm firing UConn, any number.
I think I'm with you there. Like, that's the way this game's going to play out. And I look at Alabama, like, there isn't experience on this roster in Final Fours, even with, like, the coaching staff. And, like, usually if you get a first-time head coach into the Final Four, they'll usually have some sort of Final Four experience, whether it was as an assistant, maybe as a player. No, it's not the case here. Nate Oates was a high school teacher a decade ago, worked his way up through the ranks at Buffalo, then comes to Alabama, and like, there isn't Final Four experience there. And you look at the UConn side of things, all these guys were here last year, or at least a good majority of them. So they're not going to be fazed by this week, this moment, any of that. But
it is kind of fun to have this sort of revenge type of deal. Like, there is juice to me in a Bama-Purdue potential national title game.
Yeah.
With Purdue losing to Fairleigh Dickinson last year, the 116 upset nobody saw coming. Bama is the number one overall seed a year ago, losing to Arkansas in the second round. There is a little bit of excitement to me in, or not Arkansas, excuse me, but you get the point. I was thinking of Kansas with the Arkansas loss. Regardless, there is a little bit of excitement that you get a team with Nate Oates and a team with Matt Painter. If they meet in the national title, it's kind of the revenge deal. That same juice is there for UConn-Purdue, and that's a dish, like, you get the bonus of two of the best players in the sport going head-to-head at the same position.
Yeah. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us, we'll have more thoughts from this Final Four matchup as well when we come back. Tyler Aki, Shea Norling, it's Basketball U on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shay on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
We'll get you our picks and a little same game parlay as well in just a little bit, but I want to continue on this conversation that we're having about the men's Final Four, and you look at, I think you're right. Like, UConn and Purdue is the dream matchup, not just for the television networks, but for the fans as well. If you were to get that final championship game, I think that this season it was everything you could have asked for. It's kind of the return of the one seeds as well. And the other part of this is, for me, is that you've got a team trying to go back-to-back and a team trying to go through the Virginia path as well. I think when you have those two kind of storylines going head to head, I think that's great. But the other part is, I really do think Purdue could give UConn a game. I think that this Purdue team actually has one of the best formulas to beat UConn, with a dominant big man. You've got a guy who, you've got some guards who have grown up this year as well. They're at the end of their sophomore seasons, or in the case of Lance Jones, a guy who's in his senior season. I think all of that put together, you've got experience, you've got talent. I think it's the perfect blend. And I think you've got a great coach as well. It's the perfect blend for a team to go out there and try to beat UConn.
Tyler, the question everybody wants to know from you: if Purdue wins a national title, will Sylvie claim it because Lance Jones is on the team?
Probably, like, I could see it. Like,
will Sylvie claim the national title because SIU legend Lance Jones gets a ring?
He was not very good with them last year. He was not.
Hey, man, transfers in, hits 35% of his 3 points. Not bad.
Yeah, he has been very good for them this year. I do think it all comes down to what Fletcher Loyer is going to do for this team. I want your thought on something, too, because Zach Edey has taken a lot of flack this year for the way that he plays basketball. Listen, it's not the prettiest game, and people don't like the fouls, and I've seen all the Twitter videos this week about F it, Zach Edey highlights, and it's just him at the free throw line for 2 minutes.
Or him walking into a bedroom.
Yeah, that too. But I look at what Zach Edey does and the way that he plays. Like, he should be drawing more fouls, if you ask me. Like, look at the guy's arms after a game. He looks like he just got in a cage fight with a lion after every single game.
It's so true.
It's so true. I think a lot of people look at him and go, we know he's not really an NBAer. We know he's not some like elite basketball player. It's not like we're watching, you know, Zion Williamson at Duke, and it was a moment where you're like, this guy's going to be that guy at the next level. It's just, you're right. There is a little bit of like a lack of luster around Zach Edey, and I think it's because of the fact that he's a 7'4" kid in college basketball who's been there forever, and he's just kind of bigger than everybody. He can do all that stuff down low. It's not going to be pretty when you watch him play. Like, he's not stepping out and developing a jump shot. There's not any like Tim Duncan to his game. It is kind of ugly, but he is one of the elite college basketball players that I've watched, and I don't think people give him enough credit. You're right about the fouling. They beat his ass when he gets in there, and a lot of times he doesn't get the call.
Yeah, I look at it that he has done, he has had this level of dominance all year, like last 2 years. He's going to be a back-to-back player of the year. Like, his level of dominance is something that should be celebrated and not frowned upon by the basketball community. You want to know what's interesting, too? I did not know this. I found this out yesterday. You know that he really doesn't make any money in NIL?
Really?
Because of the fact that he's Canadian and
I did see this.
He's missing out on money because he's on a student visa, so he's not allowed to make any money through NIL deals in America. The only thing he can do is if the deals are done in Canada, or if Purdue is to travel internationally, he can make money through that. So he really doesn't make all that much money through NIL. He can't like go and do a local like a commercial for like a car dealership in West Lafayette. He can't do that. He has to kind of abide by a different level of rules. And when I heard that, I was almost shocked that he's been staying in college for as long as he has.
Guy wants a national title, man. It's hard to like hate on it too much. This is a kid who came back because after losing to Florida Fairleigh Dickinson, he wanted that shot. He wanted the shot to come back and be on a team that can win a national championship. And here he is with an opportunity to do it. Final Four game against NC State. I think he's awesome. I think he's always been awesome. I know people got on him about the efficiency numbers, that he was like technically not an efficient basketball player. Who cares? You can watch him and see that he's an impossible matchup for 99% of teams. The 1% of teams that can maybe match up with him has Donovan Klingon, and it's UConn. And that's why everybody's begging for this matchup right now. UConn-Purdue is probably, if you had polled people before the tournament started, what's the most theatrical final, the most theatrical national championship? Klingon versus Edey would have been at the top of most people's list.
Yeah, I think that's as good as it gets, too. And it's funny because they're both bigs, but they're both play the game in very different ways. Zach Edey's going to bully you. Donovan Klingon's going to play with a little more finesse. Donovan Klingon is more likely to be an NBA player and a starting NBA player. He's probably going to be a lottery pick this year. Zach Edey, we don't even know if he's going to go in the first round. I think because of the quality of the draft, he'll get drafted, but I don't know if we'll see him in the first round.
What is his future as a professional basketball player?
I don't know. I really
like. Is this a get ready to learn Lithuanian buddy situation?
He's going to find a home.
He'll get drafted.
There's no way he can't get drafted on a team and not help somebody. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you go out there, play 12, 14 minutes a game.
Block some shots.
He's going to go out there and help a team. He can.
He's 7'4". Just get on the floor, grab a couple boards. We don't need you to do a whole lot.
Yeah. I wonder. The thing I'm intrigued by is
I think he's in the 30s on mock drafts.
Is he? Mm-hmm. I wonder how he'll navigate with a defensive 3-second rule. Because that's not a rule in college.
Yeah.
It's a strictly NBA rule. And I wonder how he'll navigate with that. Now, I will say he is pretty crafty with and I know a lot of fans think he's not. He is extremely smart with how he does navigate the offensive side of the 3 seconds. I think he's really good at that. But defensively, he kind of lounges down there, and he should. Like, that's the way that he should be playing. But I don't know. Like, I think that Zach Edey as a future and as a pro, there's a spot for him. Someone will find a spot for him on the bus.
It might be a good year for him to be coming out, too. Because
it's the best possible year.
Did you see what Jeff Goodman tweeted earlier this week?
Yeah,
he's spoken to an executive. Yeah. Yeah, scouts who said this might be the worst NBA draft ever.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So naturally, the Bulls have a chance to pick pretty high. But
what a waste.
I just look at the way that Edie has kind of been hating on. And people gave him a lot of flack for his comments about Rick Barnes, too, and what he said, like how he was overlooked. Yeah, he was overlooked. Like, people are like, oh, he's not overlooked. He's 7'4". He had college offers. What are you talking about? He went to people who point to IMG Academy, like, are the biggest non-ball knowers of all time. The ones that point to the IMG Academy stuff just don't understand what IMG is. A developmental center. A lot of people go there for a fifth year of high school because they're not quite ready to go to college yet. Like, IMG,
you know what
Academy,
it is?
That pissed me off when I saw people going after Edie for those comments, because he's right. The guy had three offers out of high school. He was 7'4" with three offers out of high school, one to Baylor, one to Western Kentucky, and one to Purdue. He was ranked outside the top 300 in his class. So, yes, he was overlooked.
IMG Academy is, like, there are some kids who are stellar athletes. I think J.J. McCarthy was an IMG kid. Mm-hmm. There are some kids who are outstanding athletes and go to IMG Academy and play sports. There are other kids where it is junior college with better PR.
Yeah.
You are spending a year in JUCO getting better so that you can go to actual college and play actual college sports.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to put it. And in JJ's case, he went there because it was the height of COVID and they were shutting down football in the state of Illinois in certain leagues. And it was kind of the jurisdiction on it was different school to school, it felt like. So he had to go somewhere where he could play so he could continue to rise up recruiting and ranking boards and all that stuff, too. So, yeah, I do think Zach Edey is 100% in the right. He was overlooked because of the fact that he only had three offers. He was outside the top 300. Like, this was a guy who had, like, he almost didn't have a chance to play college basketball. He was so under-recruited there. We will have our picks and also craft ourselves a little parlay as well. It's all coming up next on Basketball U.
This is Tyler and Shay on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Thank you to Justin Pottinger for producing today's show. Thank you to Riverfront Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram and buy at riverfront.com for sponsoring all of Basketball U this year. All right, Shay, it has come to the time where we make our picks and craft a little parlay as well. What do you like for our final parlay of the year, right? This is our final one till we get back to Chicago's college tailgate, right? I guess
this
we could do a nat. Like we could. We, I mean, we've got a group chat. We could always put together a little national championship game parlay as well. So you know
we
what?
Start throwing out MLB parlays.
Are we doing that? You're hot.
Why not? Who
cares? You're on
a bender.
Do
anything we want.
Shay's on a huge streak right now.
Yeah. Shay's running right now.
He's trying not to smile. I'm looking at the camera. He's trying not to smile. He's on a heater.
I'm having a very nice week in baseball. That's all I'll say.
All right, what do you like?
Very nice week. All right, I think I'm going to go with, are we doing the parlay? We're just doing the picks here. Parlay.
Actually, let's start with the picks.
Let's start with the picks.
Yeah, sure. What do you got,
Potsy? NC State and Purdue, they're the first game. Purdue's -9.5. If we want to do over-unders, too, over-unders 146.5 in this game. Again, Purdue is 9.5 favorites.
I think
I like Purdue.
Yeah.
And I like, I don't know what to do with the total. I
would go
under.
Because
I think there's a chance Purdue could just race
them. Mm-hmm. I'm with Aki here.
I'm going to go Purdue in the under there, here.
I'll go the same route. I think Purdue just has a chance to drop a bomb on NC State today. Could lock them up. DJ Burns going to have a really hard time scoring. Let's go Purdue and under.
I think Purdue, like this, they could hold NC State to like 55 points. It's going to be one of those games, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm going to take the under in this game. I'll take Purdue -9.5 as well. Cinderella story ends here for NC State.
Like, the team that gets to this stage here usually gets bombed out of this game.
Mm-hmm,
like,
exactly.
Think about last couple that we've seen. Loyola, Syracuse. Who was it last year? There were a couple. Miami.
Yeah.
Like the double digit
seed. Well, last year doesn't work. They were all like
that. I guess. But Miami was going up against like a real team. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Right. Yeah.
The spread tells the story here in both these games, I think. Yeah. So, all right. The second game tonight, Alabama versus UConn. UConn is -11.5. The over-under is 160.5.
I think that number has actually trailed down a little bit. I think it was 12.5 early in the week. So some steam on Alabama. I'm going to follow the steam. I'm going to chase it a little bit, and I think this game goes over. If Bama's going to keep it close, there's going to be a lot of points. So I'm going to go Bama in the over.
I'm with you. I'm tailing you as well here. I think Bama... Listen, the only way Bama is covering this number is by it going over. I think there's no... The only way Bama's in this game is if there is a ton of points. If there's not a ton of points being scored in this game, then it's going to be one of those where like UConn wins 87-60. Like that's what we're looking at here. An 87-60 does not get you over 160.5 or whatever you gave. So I don't think that we're going to see this game go under unless it's a really bad game.
Yeah, I'm going to take I'm leaning Alabama points in this game. UConn's going to win. It's going to be a UConn-Purdue national championship. But I got Alabama covering in this one. I'm going to go under, though. Aki, I like where your head's at. Alabama,
I'm going over.
I know. Okay. I'm going under. I like where your head's at, though. Like, okay. They're going to have to cover the over in order to win this game.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's going to happen. So I'm going to take the points, but I would take the under in this one.
Real quick, Shay, you placed a future, right?
Oh.
I did. Yeah, I saw early in the week that Alabama had a huge number next to their name in terms of having a future
bet.
That
number was crazy. Crazy.
17-1. All they got to do is win two games. This is an NC State here. Like, if Bama gets through UConn, they have an absolute chance at beating anybody on the other side. So I'm basically saying 17-1 odds to beat UConn, and then I'll hedge whatever in the national title. But I'm in on Bama. National champions. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. All right. Real quick, let's craft ourselves a little parlay here. What do you like, Shay?
I was going to take the Alabama side, but I feel a little more comfortable if I just go over 160.5. So that's what I'm going to do.
Good call in there. I like that logic there. I am going to go with an over for a point total in that game. You know, we talked about how some of the supplementary guys will step up. I think Aaron Estrada is that guy. Over 13.5 points for Aaron Estrada in this game. I think he hits like 3 or 4 threes.
I like that play, Aki. I'm going to end this parlay with NC State under 68.5 points. Purdue's going to lock them up. Cinderella story ends here. The offense won't look as clean as it has all tournament. So I got NC State under 68.5.
All right. You put that all together. You get plus 466. You can slap a little bonus on it as well. Another quick play I want to hand out to, and this is going to piss some people off, but DJ Burns on the under for today. He said like, Zach Edey's never gone up against a guy that gives him offensive pressure. Potsy, I think you took exception to that.
I absolutely love
because Hunter Dickinson only played him 1,000 times.
Yep.
So, yeah, I like the DJ Burns under in this game, sadly. I do love DJ Burns and the story that he's been, but
yeah, he's
I like
awesome.
The under.
He's awesome.
I like the under.
I thought you were going to piss people off with your little South Carolina -10 alt line in the women's title game.
All right, that is going to do it for us here on Basketball U. We'll talk to you next week here. Tyler Aki, Shay Norling. The CDGA Golf Show is coming up next on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shay on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.